how huge was the removal of the two Elwha dams?
It was colossal. It was a colossal effort. You know, I thought I had been through some pretty major environmental efforts, seeing them through from initial conception to organizing, lobbying, legislation, but the Elwha took forever, and particularly so from the perspective of the Elwha people. But it wasn't until the 70s that the upper dam became up for relicensing through the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, and that gave the public a way to step in and get involved. The tribe led the way on that, intervening in the relicensing project, and at that time, largely as the result of the Elwha Clallam Tribe Point No Point Treaty Council's efforts and Bruce Brown's groundbreaking book, Mountain in the Clouds, The Search for Wild Salmon, where he first told that story of the Elwha, how the dams were constructed illegally, the kind of shenanigans that went around in Peninsula to allow Aldwell to pull that off out of sheer pluck and bravado, and the incredible cost that the Elwha people incurred from that. So the Elwha effort had its really got going in the 80s as ours and other organizations intervened in the relicensing process. There were two kind of key elements to that. One was that the company was required by law to restore the fisheries, that relicensing a dam was the same as building a new dam, and they had to show how their relicensing was going to restore the Elwha salmon, which was impossible with the dams in place. So from that led to a long legislative campaign, negotiations with the company, a number of environmental and community groups, the tribes, of course, led to eventually legislation passed in 1992, the Elwha Restoration Act, that would eventually lead to removing the dams. However, you know that from 1992 till when the dams finally started coming out, 2011, is quite a long time. And that had to do with a whole lot of power politics in Washington, D.C., fear about what this was going to mean for the Snake River dams. One of our senators at the time, Slade Gorton, no friend to the tribal people, decided this was too much money to spend on a project like this.
So fought the appropriation, even though it had been decided that these dams will come out.
Though he voted for it.
And he voted for the removal of the dams.
He voted for the act that led to the removal of the dams, yeah. But, you know, he decided to make an issue, a grandstanding issue, demagogue the issue, and it cost, it hurt. He encouraged a handful of local people here on the peninsula who wanted the dams to stay. Even so, the company realized it was in their best interest to get rid of these dams and accept this deal where they were going to have BPA power from the Columbia at the same cost of maintaining their dams, which was next to nothing at that point. They realized that the jobs would be preserved, that the mills would be better served with the dams gone, that this great restoration of salmon on the Elwha River would be an incredible bonus to everyone. So it was a long and frustrating story with an ultimately good end. And one of the motivations for this fourth edition was to be able to kind of update that story now that the dams are gone and the salmon are returning upriver and the news is incredibly good.
What would be the logic behind saving the dams? Why would a guy hand paint a sign and put it up in the trees as you're headed for a nice backpacking trip to the hot springs? What's the possible logic of that? I don't get that at all, and I never did.
You are asking the wrong guy.
Yeah, probably
on that
so.
One.
Yeah, probably so.
I know the guy you're talking
about.
Oh,
and you know the person who did it.
Yeah, Chastain, Mark Chastain. He wanted to save the lakes because there were a few swans, trumpeter swans, coming down from the north in the winter that would stay there.
Hence the phrase "swan song" for the dance.
That's the phrase. Save the swans. Other, you know, the recreational potential of the lakes. You know, he was an old codger that just didn't want those dams to go. And there were quite a few like them in the area, people for whom, you know, the mill was their multi-generational livelihood. And they saw it as a threat. They saw it also as environmentalists, city people, Native American tribes getting the upper hand. Maybe also the whole industrial development of the peninsula, as it rolled out, was coming into question, and this became a symbol for the old ways. You know, they'd been hit with the spotted owl, the drastic reduction of logging in Olympic National Forest,
marbled murrelet.
With the marbled murrelet, the salmon listings, and it was, you know, it was maybe a place that they thought they could make a stand.
Yeah. Marbled murrelet, or as some people know them, fog larks.
That's an old loggers term fog larks, because you know they would hear them in the morning, you know, going into or in the morning coming out to fish, in the evening going in to feed their young up in the forests, and you know what the hell these things were. Right. They made a lot of noise.
The largest dam removal project in the history of North America, isn't that
yep.
the case? Yeah.
Yeah.
So can the snake dams be that far behind, especially since orcas are starving?
It sure looks like the numbers coming up for the Snake River dams. It's becoming harder and harder and harder for the government, both state and federal governments, to justify those dams. There's court orders now. Everything's getting looked at again, and the Chinook salmon situation, Puget Sound Chinook, and the orcas. To me, it's going to be inevitable that those dams are going to have to be breached.
Right. I don't see any signs around. And I'm not trying to give anybody any ideas, but save the goats. They're taking the goats out. They're taking them by helicopter. They're tranquilizing them, taking them by helicopter, and putting them back in the North Cascades. Finally.
Yeah, finally. That's a project that, when I first came to the peninsula, went to some park hearings in 1973 to testify about saving Shy Beach and Point of the Arches. You know, with Robert Sund and Steve Johnson and Ed Tisch. Polly Dyer, the legendary conservationist, who president of Olympic Park Associates for many years, and a couple of their board members testified about the problems the goats were causing dramatically at that time up on Klahani Ridge and Hurricane Ridge area. Trampling, wallowing, you know, creating craters of non-vegetation. And so this is an issue that has been going on for decades and decades and decades. Got off to a good start in the mid-90s after they had done a bunch of experimental live capture and relocation. Got the population back down from over 1,000, estimated over 1,000 where it was at that time. And then came out with an environmental impact statement, draft environmental impact statement, where removal by aerial shooting was going to be the preferred method for getting rid of the rest of the goats. There was a lot of opposition to that. Congressman Norm Dix, very powerful chair of Appropriations Committee, got involved and put a halt to it. He said, this is just not going to happen. We're not going to fund this. It's not going to happen. And so the process just came to a halt. And I think that as long as Congressman Dix was still in office, the National Park Service was afraid to move on it. But in 2010, my good friend Bob Boardman was killed by a goat up on Klahani Ridge, and suddenly the issue became highly visible again. At that time, the population of the goats was on a trajectory to once again push toward 1,000. And the park realized that we've got to do something about it. We had a good, strong superintendent, and the process began. And this year, the first phase of live capture and removal, translocation to the Cascades, took place. I think 115 or 119 goats were captured. That'll be continued for another year or two. And then the remaining goats that are too difficult to capture will be lethally removed by ground hunting or some aerial hunting as well. Shooting, I should say. Ground shooting, aerial shooting. And it's, you know, that's an important process to restore these alpine communities full of these plants that have been evolving with you know, climate change for millions of years before we stirred in this, you know, brand new rocky outcrop herbivore into the mix, changing their entire ecology. So I think with the pressures that global warming is putting on the Olympic ecosystem, getting rid of those goats is of paramount importance now.